everyone, and welcome to Minute 10 of Season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Tyler Howitt of the Couch Potato Philosophy Podcast. Welcome back, Tyler.
Hey, it's good to be here. One more minute to go.
Yeah, just be careful when you walk up to the desk.
You know. That's right.
Especially if you have to try to find your zipper, you know.
Yeah. Well, the computer will help me with that, so it's fine.
Yeah. All right. That's good. So Minute 10 begins with McClane entering the lobby and ends with him finding out where Holly is supposed to be.
Yep.
So we see him entering this huge lobby, okay?
Yes.
And there's this humongous Christmas tree sitting there on the side,
yep.
Not lit. You know, it
feels so out of place to completely. This cold lobby. Yeah. Yeah.
You'd think that they would have it lit up at that point, because especially if people are coming in and out going to this party,
yeah.
Whatever it is.
Start the festive atmosphere early. Yeah.
Yeah. So yep. We can see that there's the concierge at the desk. You know, we see revolving doors. There's like two sets mm-hmm. of revolving doors that you can come in. Now, I found this is the first time I noticed this, but on the glass behind the Christmas tree, there's a big sign that says Merrill Lynch.
Oh no, I didn't see that.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, which you know, I mean, Merrill Lynch is a financial broker.
Yeah.
And I was saying to myself, what the hell is that? You know, if this is supposed to be, you know, the Nakatomi building, is the building supposed to only be for people working in Nakatomi, or is, you know, is there other stuff also? Because again, we saw yesterday that there's the emblem at the beginning.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
You know, yeah. There's an emblem outside, you know, for Nakatomi. So
yeah.
You know, are they renting out space to other companies, or are they, you know, taking it up all themselves? I always thought that the building is entirely, you know, dealing with people with Nakatomi, but apparently, you know, we have Merrill Lynch there too.
Yeah. I wonder if that's an oversight. Is that just a production design oversight that that the actual building is rented out to Merrill Lynch as well? Because in Nakatomi Plaza there's a safe, there's all of this, you know, security. You'd think that would be, they wouldn't want other things, other businesses there, I guess. So yeah, that seems like a production design oversight more than they rent out other things.
Yeah, probably. But again, it was great catching it, you know.
Yeah.
As well, we mentioned earlier in the week, I like catching these things, not because
totally.
Not because I'm trying to, you know, say that they made mistakes in the movie, but just, you know, showing that,
interesting.
That it's just fun to find these things because you don't notice them. I mean, again, I've seen this movie 50, 60 times probably over the course of my life, you know, and I've never noticed it before. It's not totally. Because it's something that just flashes right by. But when you're watching it yeah. 1 minute at a time, you one will notice these things a little bit more.
Totally. Well, and the similar to that, the security desk is just, it looks like a Star Trek console. It's just these big flashy buttons.
It's also higher up. It looks like
it's very high.
It's a raised platform and stuff like that.
Yep.
You know, so yep. John starts walking over to the reception desk, and then you see him pull out his wallet as he's walking yeah. over there. You know,
yeah,
what specifically he's trying to show him, you know, I'm not really sure. Is he taking out some sort of ID? Is he taking out his badge?
Yeah.
You know, what's he doing? And then we see the guy sitting at the concierge. It's an actor named Rick Cicetti, who has 11 TV credits and 5 movie credits. You know, he's definitely just a very small little background character.
Sure.
In all sure. of the movies that he's been in. But every time I see this movie, he reminds me so much. He's a John Larroquette lookalike, as far as I'm concerned.
Honestly, thank you. I was like, he always looks so familiar to me. And I've never looked him up. But yes, I would agree with you. He absolutely looks like John Larroquette.
Yeah, yep. Completely. And, you know, he's dressed, he's got a vest, he's got a tie, a jacket. There's mm-hmm. a Nakatomi emblem on his jacket, which goes back to what we were saying before, that this
yeah,
is
this is the building.
Security for Nakatomi. There's no question about that, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, then John walks up and goes, "Hi, good evening." He goes, "I'm here to see Holly McLean." And then he points with his pencil and says, "Just type it in there," and points towards this little computer. Now, obviously, the graphics from 1988 are hilarious.
They're great.
Looking at them from today's perspective. Yep. You know, but I mean, I like the added touch that it's a touchscreen, you know, computer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like when do you think
oh, yeah.
they created touchscreen computers?
Ooh, I didn't look that up. I'm trying to think of when I first saw them. Let's say 87. Let's just say it's super close and they were wanting to flash this new technology.
Well, let's put it this way. It was first used. They had some form of it already in 1946.
No way, yes. Really? Wow, that's shocking to me. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, again, wow. It's not the same technology that we're seeing here, but that was the first patent. Okay, there was a patent that was a stylus designed for sports telecasting, which when placed against an intermediate cathode ray tube display, it would amplify and add to the original signal. Okay.
Okay. Actually, yeah. That makes sense.
And then in the 1960s, they had the first finger-driven touchscreen, was developed by a company called Royal Radar Establishment, located in England. And you know, and then in 1972, a group of researchers in the University of Illinois filed for a patent on an optical touchscreen, okay, which became, again, this is all, you know, the early stages of how things, you know, moved off. In 77, there was a company called Elographics, which was working with Siemens, and they began developing a transparent implementation of an existing opaque touchpad technology.
Sure.
Okay. Then in 1984, Fujitsu had a touchpad that was used. And then Sega released in 1985 a Sega graphic board, which was touch-based. So, again, it's just amazing the way that this stuff just changed. You know, because nowadays
I'm honestly reeling from 1940s. There is a patent for it. That's crazy to me. Wow. But that makes sense. And also it also made me think, you know, I wonder if a James Bond film, you know, did it. I'm thinking, I know in, I want to say it's, A View to a Kill, but I could be wrong, or maybe it's for Your Eyes Only. They have a computer that's doing a kind of a criminal artist sketch kind of a thing. But I'm wondering if there was some touchscreen involved in that. Just
no,
because
in A View to a Kill, you do have you know, Christopher Walken's character using Zorin.
Zorin.
Yeah, sorry. You have Zorin using computer technology to figure out that he's James Bond, you know, based on face recognition or stuff like that. But that's not really touchpad and stuff like that. But but the graphics here are just really, really poor compared to what we're used to these days, but it's still fun. And then it says on the screen, Nakatomi Plaza directory, touch key with first letter of person's last name, you know, and then,
and then he goes,
and then presses on the M, and then we get a list of all these different names from there. Now, I went through every one of these names to see if any of them are listed IMDb, because we always know that a lot of times in movies they will have, you know, little Easter eggs of characters. Now, the three that I came up with from the M's, okay, so he goes through two screens of M's. So one of them is Pedro Martinez. Okay, now I don't think they're talking about the baseball player because he wasn't playing in 1988. But I found a number of people in the movie industry called Pedro Martinez. I have a feeling that it's a guy who had passed away a few years earlier, and it was used more of an homage for him. you know, based on someone who worked with him or something like that.
Sure.
Right. And then we have, you know, Terry Miller, who is the second associate director in the second, he's the second unit
Yeah.
director, basically. You know, so he appears there. And then you have someone
Yeah.
named Gregory McMurray, who also works in the movie industry. He deals with visual effects and stuff like that.
He did the video and graphics display for this movie,
There you go.
Greg McMurray.
And
Yep.
that's why he got his name written in there. You know, so again, I'm
Yep.
assuming that the rest of the names have some significance. I don't think they're just going to give us
Sure.
random names, you know, however they do it. But it's just fun to see these type of things.
Well, there's one. Did you look up? And I can't remember. Does
Yeah,
Armada
it goes
go
through the
through
G's, but we're not
G's?
there yet.
Oh, yeah,
We'll
they do.
get to the G's in a second. The G's
Oh,
we
okay.
get some good ones
We'll
too.
get there.
Right. And then, you know,
Yeah, there's a couple good ones.
then basically John says, cute toy, and the response is, yeah, you have to take a leak. It'll help you find your zipper. Now, what does that mean? I don't really know. Like, what type of response is that? Come on, John Larroquette. What type of
I think it's
response is that? You know?
it, I thought I laughed. My wife had the exact same reaction you did. She was like, that's a dumb line. I said, no, it's really funny. I don't know. I just
It's
thought it was,
funny
I, it
because it
got
makes
me.
no sense.
Just
That's
like,
why it's
yeah, you
funny.
know, technology. Yeah. It's so weird. It's so
It's
random. I
completely
love
random.
it.
No, again,
Yep.
I'm used to it. I've seen this movie so many times, so that's fine. But I'm
Yeah.
trying to think of,
But you never think of it
right.
until
I'm
you
trying to
really
think
look
if
at it.
there's any real significance to it, and I couldn't find any significance to it. You know, and then.
No, I think it goes with this weird motif in the last 5 minutes, you know, of this film, this weird thing of we're talking about a lot of technology, weirdly, you know, just the CB, CD, TV, you know, all of the VHS, comes up, and then we have this too. It just feels very, they're setting up. This is just, hey man, we're in the 80s now. Look at all of our
Yeah.
technology.
And it's
So,
funny looking at it
yeah.
34 years later and saying, look at all the
Yeah.
technology they had in its infancy. Yeah.
Yep. Oh yeah, the touchscreen computer that I have with me on my in my pocket
Is
all the
more
time, you know.
powerful
Yep.
than what they have in the
Oh.
whole Nakatomi building.
The entire building. Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Right. And so then when he doesn't find her name under M, so he goes, Christ. And then you see him
Yep.
then touch, he goes back to the main menu and touches on G. And then he starts looking through the G's. And what's funny is the M's, they
Yep.
had two screens, and the G's, they only had one. Okay. So once again, I went through the list of names here. And what's really funny is I thought that there was a misspelling here with one of the names.
I did too. I looked. It's the only one that I looked up, and I think it's the is it
Yeah.
Bruce
Yeah.
Gefeller? Yep.
It's just,
He's the construction coordinator on Die Hard. That's the
that's
one I
right.
found.
And I thought that was hilarious
Yep.
that you know, I
Me
said,
too.
okay, it's a mistake. In Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, there was a scene where they see all these destinations, you know, when they were sitting in the bus stop, and there are things that are misspelled there. And I thought, okay, someone just misspelled
Oh.
here. They misspelled it, you know,
Yeah.
they just, you know, they're missing letters or whatever it is, but that's really his name, Bruce Gefeller, Gefeller. And the other person who is listed that I was able to find is Liz Galloway, or is it Lisa Galloway? I think it's one of two, where she's listed as the production coordinator in the movie. So, you know, it's fun to see that they find people to, you know, find ways to put these people's names into. Right, her name is Elizabeth Galloway. So I guess it was Liz Galloway.
You know, randomly, because I bet you no two people have ever talked about this person on a podcast ever, which is maybe a shame. But Bruce Gefeller, if we just look at him really
Okay.
quick, he did Die Hard with a Vengeance, The Nutty Professor, Mouse Hunt. Let's see, what else? He, The TV movie Kenny Rogers as the Gambler, The Adventure Continues. Just interesting. He worked, let's see, his last credits 1999, His first was I misread it. I thought it was Roadhouse, actually. It was Roadie. Roadie in 1980. So he had a good 20-year run there of films he was a construction coordinator on.
Yeah, seriously. But also the name Gefeller. Have you ever heard that name before?
Gefeller. No, I did the exact same thing as you. I didn't look up anybody else, honestly. I thought, no, Gefeller. So he's the only one I looked up. I should have looked up the others. But yeah, I did the same thing. I've never heard the name.
Yeah, but it looks like it's a misspelling. But so Bruce, if you're listening, I apologize for thinking that your name is made up.
Yeah.
You know, but the fact that, but you should be happy. The fact that I looked it up was why we were talking about it. You know, sometimes Absolutely. You look for things that are out of the ordinary and want to talk about those. You know, so he's pretty upset. You can see that John is now pretty upset that, you know, that she listed under Gennaro as opposed to, you know, yeah. using her own name. I mean, next week we'll talk a little bit more about why she claims that she's using it, but we also know that this is a big yep. plot device and that's why it's being used.
Oh, it is.
You know, and then he looks over and, you know, it says to him, you know, it gives him like a little bit of a floor plan and says, mm-hmm. you know, it starts listing this on the 30th floor. And then John says to the guard, 30th floor. And the guard looks up and that's actually how the minute ends.
Yeah. So the minute doesn't, the last line there, the only one
no, left in the building tomorrow. Is not. It's tomorrow. It doesn't fit in there. Doesn't fit in. No, sorry, it's Monday.
Let me, Monday.
And I do have a lot to say about that too.
Okay. Okay. So I won't go ahead. Other than I will ask a question and you answer it on Monday. Is why did we other than plot? Why did we need to ask any of these questions if they're the only ones left exactly. in the building? But
that is the ultimate question that I have asked myself for years. Whenever watching this scene,
right?
Completely. There's no explanation. Other
than we need to see
things. Exactly. In other words, for us to tell it that's the way it is. Right. All right. Do you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
Just the lighting, and it's because most of the rest of this movie takes place at night. I mean, basically, yeah, from minute 10 until the end, this is at night or indoors. But what we see for the drive over the last few minutes and then up into this, it's almost noir. We've got these stark shadows from the LA, this hazy bright orange LA sun that's casting it's casting a color across the last 5 minutes. Everything is orange tinted. Everything is just hazy and kind of gnarly outside. And then he walks into the building and these just stark vertical shadows, almost like bars in a jail cell are almost there. I love the lighting in here because the rest of it is on a set, you know, for the rest of the film, and the rest of it is, or pretty much, and the rest of it is at night. And so we don't get this shadow play in the same way. There will be shadows later on in the different floors that he's on. But I just thought it was something I'd never thought about before with Die Hard, which is always at night that these shadows are here. And I think it sets it nicely. It sets us in LA. It sets us at sunset on whether this is a Friday or a Saturday night. We don't know, but,
I think you convinced think it me just, that it's Friday. Night, did a, but, you know, it makes more sense than it's Friday. Night.
Yeah, I'm there.
I think it's easier, in my head, it's you know, Friday. to set up and write that the plot takes place on Christmas Eve. You know, to make things easier for people to try to explain. The same reason that they say that you know, 12 terrorists take over a building, but if you count them, they're actually 13. So.
Oh, seriously?
Yes.
I've never counted. Wow.
I used to know all their names by heart, but you know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are 13. Oof. There are 13 because 12, 11 die. That's what it comes down to. 11 die and 2 survive.
That's true.
Sorry for that spoiler for people who didn't.
That's so sad, huh?
But I remember when I was in high school, I had this poster on my wall, and it said, on Christmas Eve, 12 terrorists take over an LA skyriser or something like that. Yeah. And it's like, okay, they now I know that they got two facts wrong on that poster. It's not Christmas Eve, and it's not, you know, and it's not 12.
So funny. or who are they not counting as a terrorist in all of that? Yeah, Hans. Interesting.
Hans is not a terrorist.
Yeah, he's a businessman. Yeah.
That's right. Or maybe they just don't count, Theo.
Yeah, he's the computer guy.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's not really. He's just a hired help. Trying to help. I don't know.
He doesn't hold a gun, I don't think, at any point. Maybe he does, but yeah.
Does he have a gun? I don't think so.
I'm trying to think at the very end, maybe does he, but I don't think so.
I don't think he has a gun at all. No. Yep. I would definitely say that he does not.
There's therefore definitely not a terrorist, because you're only a terrorist if you have a gun.
But is there someone else who doesn't? I'm also trying to think from that perspective. Is there someone else who doesn't carry a gun at all?
Even Hans does, yeah.
No, the guy who gets knocked out doesn't have a gun.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you don't see him ever use a gun. He's the guy who's helping Theo the whole time.
Oh, he doesn't have a gun?
I think his name is Ali or something like that. You don't see him with a gun.
Huh. Yeah. Interesting. No, I just assumed. Huh. I'm telling you, I'm listening right along for the rest of these episodes too, because I have not thought about this. This has been a really cool experiment for me. There's always been the Minute by Minute podcast that I've heard of, but until this, I've never done one, and I like it. I think it's fun.
All right, I'll keep that in mind for the future.
Yeah,
you know, you've passed the test this week. How's that?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah,
so, just because I know random trivia about things, I think.
Yeah, why not? That makes sense. All right, so the script has a few discrepancies here. So first of all, the description of the Nakatomi Lobby is great. It says the Nakatomi Lobby night, which again, we know it's not night. It's dusk, And it says beautiful and on first glance deserted. Finally, a sound in the sterile lobby reveals the presence of a security guard hidden until now behind a massive desk. McLean goes over and signs in. And then he goes, Holly McLean. The guard points to a prominent touchscreen computer console. Just type it in there. McLean is confused for the moment. Then he moves to the screen. He gives the guard a look. The guard raises his eyebrows as if to say, give it a try. McLean types, Holly McLean, Holly. Pause. The screen replies, no such employee listed. So, instead of just not finding her on the list, the computer's smarter and tells him it's not there. And then it says, McLean frowns, thinks, simultaneously inspired and suspicious. He types again. McLean types, Gennaro Holly. This time the screen changes, shows an elevation of the building, and then a floor plan of the 30th floor with Holly's office blinking.
Hmm.
And then McLean turns to the guard and says, cute toy. The guard says, yeah, when you have to take a leap, it'll help you find your zipper. McLean goes, 30th floor. So I like the way the scene plays out in the movie. They didn't need to switch it. So
no, it's not very different at all, other than the graphics are different. No. But honestly, that's the difference between a script writer and the graphics guy going, yeah, that's not gonna look very good.
Right. Exactly. No, but I mean, there's a little difference with the way they describe things. Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, the action is the same.
Yeah.
But I like the detailed description of how they do these things. So the novel has two different changes that I would mention here. One of them is that the security guard, it says, an old white guy in a gray uniform sits at a desk reading a paper. And, I mean, it goes through and they have a little bit of a conversation. John figures out this guy's a retired cop. They start talking a little bit about police work and stuff like that. It's not needed.
No.
From the movie's perspective, but I guess in the novel it makes a little more sense. Now there's one other thing that I love that they do in the novel is as he's walking up to the Nakatomi building or the Claxton building, he notices a Jaguar parked a little bit down the road.
Oh, okay.
Away from the view of the security guard.
Oh. Okay.
So basically, he sees the car that theoretically Carl and Theo are sitting in.
Okay, that's cool. So they're
all. It also shows how observant he can be.
Yeah.
I like that added touch there. Right. I'm not saying it's a great book.
Sure.
But it's, you know.
Oh, I love.
But
I love
they made a great movie from the book.
Yeah.
You know. Okay, so every Friday we have a surprise segment.
Yes.
That at this point still my guests don't know what the segment is.
No.
Eventually, you know. Well, eventually people will know when they start listening to them. You know. Especially since I'm not recording everything before it's going to be released. So we'll have, I'll hopefully get about 8 or 10, you know, of my guests to be surprised by it. And then all those later on that aren't listening to the podcast will be surprised also, you know.
Yeah.
So the segment that we do on Friday is called Weekend Surprise, okay. Where basically I will posit the question to my guest. Is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not?
I was hoping that this was going to be this.
Explain your answer.
Now, was it last episode that I basically started my argument?
You started talking about it, and I didn't want to stop you because I didn't want to give away.
I was hoping that this would come up, actually. This is
I think it was on Wednesday. If I remember correctly, it was Wednesday.
Is it Wednesday? Okay.
I think so.
I 100%. It's a Christmas movie. Because if we're really going into this, you know, what constitutes a Christmas movie? Do we have to have carols? Do we have to have snow? Do we have to have Santa Claus? I think it's a time of year, and it's a feeling that comes with it. And now this isn't hot chocolate and carols and saccharine, sweet, happy times. Although it has a good ending. We have, John McClane, more than once is whistling Christmas carols. We've got, what do we have in the end? I mean, spoiler for those, I guess, who haven't listened to it, but if you're listening to this without having seen the movie, then I don't know what you're doing. we have him and his wife reuniting at the end, and presumably then going to his house with his to her house with his kids. And
Paulina.
And Paulina, yeah, we can't forget Paulina, who has thankfully not been deported after the jerk news guy. So let's just say it is family. It's about a guy literally saving his family, or at least part of his family, and it's set at Christmas. We have Christmas music, we have Christmas references. It's set at a Christmas party. I don't know if you can get Christmassy otherwise. If in comparison, White Christmas. It's only the climax that takes place at Christmas. The rest of it is lead up, and we just happen to have a song that happens at Christmas. But White Christmas is not a Christmas movie in its overall theme. Not everything is about
Christmas.
It's
a war movie.
It's a war movie. Yeah, it's a war movie. And it's a musical.
It's a song and dance war movie.
That the climax happens at Christmas. So to me, if White Christmas is a Christmas movie, then so is Die Hard.
And that's your excuse? You're going to say if White Christmas is considered...
Almost.
I'm sorry, Tyler. That's a little weak for that to be your final...
That's my final
explanation so, there.
I think for all of the reasons I said before, that it is about a man bringing his family together whole at the end on Christmas Eve at a Christmas party. I think if anything... if that doesn't make it a Christmas movie, I don't know. I don't know what does.
Okay. Great. Very good.
Better
Thank you
final
very much
line.
For answering
Better
that. There you go. Better final line for sure. All right. So you want to, for the one final time, let people know how they can get in touch with you.
Sure. On Twitter, I'm at Tyler Howitt. And on Facebook, you can search for my name. And then on Instagram, I'm also at Tyler Howitt. And then that Couch Potato Philosophy podcast, if you search for us on Twitter and Instagram, you will find us as well.
Excellent. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe on any podcatcher you might be using to listen to this show. And finding me is also quite simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Facebook, or you can go to our website, which is movierobminute.com. So until Monday, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay indeed.